The EMS Educast is a podcast by and for EMS educators. Every week, our panel of education experts hosts a program that brings you the latest and greatest in EMS education technology, methods, and techniques. Your hosts will regularly bring you guests from all over the world to tell you about innovative EMS education programs and experiences in other places. Join us each week for the EMS Educast. And visit www.emseducast.com to subscribe with iTunes or the RSS feed, listen to archived shows, and view future show descriptions. The EMS Educast.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 189 of the EMS Educast. I'm Rob Terrio, and sadly, Greg Fries is not with us tonight. Something's come up for him. And Bill Toon is not here either, so it's just me solo with our guest. So I have with me Connie Meyer. Is it Meyer or Myers, Connie?
It's one Meyer.
Just one Meyer, okay. Do you get that a lot?
Yes.
Okay. And Jim Judge. And tonight we're going to be talking about ethics and ethics teaching in EMS. So I want to start by getting a little bit of information about our guest, and Connie, might as well start with you. So Connie, tell us a little bit about where you are and how you got started in your EMS career and how that led to education.
Okay. Well, I am in Kansas. I'm in eastern Kansas, in a rural part of the state right now. I got started in EMS because I was in a small rural town in Kansas, and I worked at the hospitals, and I was business manager, so I could pick up and leave and go on an EMS call and still be able to do my work later. So that's how I got started in it. And after I finished paramedic school, I was working for Johnson County MedAct, the same place Bill Toon works.
Bill Toon, in fact. Right. Now, was that before Bill Toon or during Bill Toon?
It was before.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And during.
I didn't know anyone predated Bill Toon. Now, I see an image of you, and you look pretty young. You look younger to me than Bill.
Well, good. Tell him that.
I will. Don't you worry.
Because I've already retired, and he's not eligible just yet.
Yeah, he's going to, though. He's about to in the next few months.
Yeah. Yeah. So after I finished paramedic school and I was working for Johnson County, I also worked part-time as an adjunct faculty at the paramedic training program at Johnson County Community College. So, and during that time, I became involved with NAEMT, and I've been on their board for almost 20 years, actually. I've got one more year to go. I'm currently the immediate past president of NAEMT.
Okay, so now do you know Trey Rodriguez?
I've met him. He's with the National Registry of EMTs, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're with the National Association of EMTs.
Oh, okay. My confusion.
Two different organizations.
All right. Disregard. So you were teaching at the community college, and you were teaching EMT and EMTP?
Paramedic, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. In the United States, the paramedic level is, I think you have different levels of paramedic.
Right. Yeah, we have three levels.
And we have EMT, EMT intermediate, or now they're called advanced EMT.
Advanced.
And then paramedics.
Right.
Which I didn't stop at the middle level. I went from the basic EMT to paramedic and worked at that for 25 years.
Wow. That's a good lengthy career. And how's your back?
My back, excuse me, is pretty good. my leg and my arm are not so good now, but they're getting better.
Yeah. That's a Connie, are you comfortable sharing the information you shared with me before the show?
Sure. Just because you never know what life is going to throw at you. Mm-hmm. I apparently have a venous malformation in my brain, and it caused me to have a stroke the 20th of August.
And so far you've been recovering pretty well from the sounds of it.
Yeah, I've graduated from a walker to a cane and back to driving some, and haven't started writing yet because I'm very right-handed, and my right hand is still affected. But yeah, my primary job now is rehabbing.
Right. So it was a left hemispheric hemorrhage thing.
Right. Yes, it was.
Okay. And was it operable? Did they repair it surgically?
It was not operable.
Okay. Okay.
Cavernous malformation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was too deep in the brain to operate.
Right. Right. Well, I'm glad you're recovering and glad you joined us on the show. So 25 years on the road, and were you teaching simultaneously or on a part-time basis while you were on the road?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
So which were you doing for the last, say, 15, 20 years? Were you teaching full-time and on the road part-time or the other way around?
I was on the road full-time the whole time.
Okay.
And teaching part-time for about 10 years of that.
Oh, okay. Okay. And, well, let's turn to Jim now. Jim, why don't you tell us about yourself, where you're from, and your beginnings?
Well, you bet, Rob. Thanks for the opportunity to be on the show tonight.
It's good to have
you. I'm pretty old when it comes to EMS. I actually started in 1972, and my entire career has been here in the state of Florida. And believe it or not, when I started, I worked for a funeral home ambulance service, which people will chuckle at. But, you know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, the funeral homes were, quite frankly, the primary emergency medical provider. And so I did that for a few years and gained a lot of experience and went on to the fire service. And I spent quite a few years in the fire service in Palm Beach County, rose through the ranks up to a fire officer. And, you know, life was good. And then I had an opportunity to manage an emergency medical service up in the Indian River County or Vero Beach area. So I took that opportunity, went up there and was the EMS director for, oh gosh, close to 15 years in Indian River County, Florida. The main municipality is Vero Beach. Great career there. And then another opportunity came up where I went up into Central Florida and I was the EMS director for, oh gosh, a little over 12 years for Lake and Sumter Emergency Medical Services. It was a two-county not-for-profit agency. And now I'm currently over in Volusia County, which is home of the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach. And I work for the Department of Public Protection. So, you know, while the hair's gray, got a few wrinkles, I have never lost my love or enthusiasm for emergency medical services.
It's so refreshing to hear other people my age and Bill's age. I was going to say agent, but I didn't want to offend the two of you and who are still enthusiastic about the profession. Now, those are both great backgrounds. Let me come back to Connie. So, Connie, what about post-secondary education? Apart from EMTP, have you pursued other post-secondary endeavors?
I actually have an associate degree for my paramedic, and I have an associate degree registered nurse now, too.
Okay.
So
very good.
That's my was planning to be my retirement career was nursing, and I've done some emergency nursing with that, but currently just rehabbing myself.
Okay. Well, Bill Toon's joined us, but I want to move over to Jim, and Jim, ask you the same question. How about you?
You bet. Bachelor's degree in public administration through Barry University out of Miami, Florida, which is one of the oldest universities in the South, and also a background in emergency management, coming up on 20 years as a certified emergency manager, and also have the Florida Professional Emergency Manager designation. So, you know, long, great career in both fire services, emergency medical, as well as emergency management.
Okay, excellent. So Bill just joined us in the show. Bill, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Sorry for the confusion or challenge joining you. Hi, Connie.
Hi, Bill. Long time no see.
You looked wonderful yesterday. It was wonderful to see you. So.
Thank you.
So she was at a retirement party for one of our employees, captains finishing 25 years of service. So we had that just on Monday.
Nice.
So that was a very nice event and everything, and got to see Connie there. So
nice. We were having a retirement party at Georgian College where I teach, and the fire alarm went off. That was terrible. Just ruined everything.
So certainly can have an impact on the experience.
Yeah, yeah. It was very cold outside. I was telling Connie and Jim that we were getting some snow today. And I hate to say that being from Canada, because I think the perception of a lot of Americans is all we have is snow and that we send it your way. And that the only snow the United States gets is the snow that comes from Canada. But I just want to make the record clear that that's not the case. We do not send snow south of the border. It's nothing to do with us, just to be clear. So, Connie, Greg recruited the two of you for the show tonight to talk about ethics. And I'm presuming there's a connection between you two. Do you work together on this topic?
Yes. Well, I headed up a committee appointed by President Don Lundy of NAEMT. We looked at our current code of ethics for EMTs and did some revisions to that this year. And Jim also served on that committee.
Okay.
So Jim is the secretary of NAEMT.
Okay. I'm seeing the connection now. And
So
why the interest in ethics? Where did you develop your interest, Connie, initially?
Well, I've always had kind of an interest in that. And when I went to nursing school, I got a little more interest in it. But the fortunate thing about working for Johnson County MedAct is that they allowed you to do those extra things ethically for your patients.
Mm.
And I always felt like that was an important part of my job there.
Can you give me an example?
Well, we could go beyond just pick up the patient, take them to the hospital. We could arrange for community assistance for the patients, and we took them to the hospital of their choice, which falls into the patient autonomy part of ethics.
Right.
And just things like that. We weren't on such a heavy time schedule that you had to be ready for the next call right away. We were able to do those extra little things with our patients. So the code of ethics that NAEMT has, we actually were approached by our members, and they wanted us to update the code of ethics. It was originally written back in 1978 by Dr. Charles Gillespie. And what we did was look at that code of ethics and see if it was still relevant. Mm-hmm. And we found that there were some things that were not covered. Some things like social media.
Right.
And things like that weren't really the old code of ethics wasn't relevant anymore. So what we did was we had a small committee, and we looked at this, and we looked at code of ethics for other professions and brought those into it, and we rewrote it, and then we actually sent it to Dr. Gillespie, and he was fine with it, and he signed off on it, so we still have his name on it. So
nice.
He really liked it because we made it a little more concise and brought the language into the 21st century.
Were you obligated to do that, or was that a professional courtesy to contact him?
It was just a professional courtesy.
Yeah. I'm sure he appreciated that, too. They must have been very flattered.
Yeah, we still wanted to give him credit for the original.
Sure.
For being the original author of it. So.
Yeah. And Jim, where did you first get your interest in this subject?
Well, great question. When I first decided to run for a board position on the National Association of EMTs, having looked at the website, you know, and having been a longtime NAEMT member, one of the things that I felt we needed to do was to go back and review the code of ethics. You know, when you see so many EMTs and paramedics in many professions who have gotten themselves into trouble with social media, you know, I felt that we needed to do something to enhance the code of ethics. So I made that one of the platforms that I ran on. And then, you know, as things work out, was elected, and then working with Connie has been just absolutely wonderful. And then when Connie called to ask me to participate on the code of ethics committee, I was delighted because, again, that was one of the things that, you know, that I'd identified that we needed to look at.
social media seems to be the inner voice that's no longer the inner voice. It's really incredible how controversial it's become and how revealing it's been over the last couple of years, isn't it?
You know, it really has. And, you know, I mean, it seems like every day. I mean, I'm sure we're all on those listservs where we're, you know, reading news articles from all around the world and certainly all around the United States and Canada. And it seems like there's hardly a day goes by that you're not reading about four or five individuals who are, you know, losing their jobs because of, you know, social media. And I think that it becomes so commonplace that I don't think people sometimes realize just the impact that it has, the pictures that individuals take while they're on the job, comments that they make, and the ramifications back, you know, to the family of the patients that we care for. And it's about, you know, protecting our patients. It's about protecting our families. And, you know, so we've really felt that that was an area that needed to be strengthened within the Code of Ethics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that must have been a pretty central focus. The two of you have done some collaborative work outside of developing this Code of Ethics. I understand you've actually developed a course.
Well, I'm not actually the lead. I started the development of it as president, but it's kind of got its own committee now. The newest course that NAEMT is rolling out right now is called Personal Leadership and Ethics, and it's called the People Course, PEPL. And you'll be seeing it coming around to the sites that do PHTLS and AMLS and EPC, all of our other courses, our safety course. But we developed that course because we saw the need for a personal leadership course, not a management course, but kind of a leader in the back of the truck course. Mm-hmm. And that's the impetus behind that course.
Now, have you piloted this course or rolled it out, or is it?
Yes, it's been through the beta course and it's rolling out as we speak, actually.
And what's the response been like?
It's people are really wanting this course, so I think it's going to grow very, very rapidly because it's a unique course that no one else has in EMS.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the curriculum, the length of the course, the content, the activities.
It's like all of our courses. It's a two-day course, but it's got some online components before you come into the course, some reading. And we kind of used – I don't know if you're familiar with the Ipsley course.
I am not, no.
Bill, are you familiar with the Ipsley courses?
Nope. I'm all ears, Connie. I'm very fascinated about this whole program that you guys have developed. So, and Rob's been asking all the great questions, so I can just ride on his coattails.
Yeah. Ipsley is like a public safety ethics and a leadership course. And it's a college course. So what we did was take some components out of that course, and we got some of the instructors and the people who run that course to help us write the NAEMT People course. So we kind of honed it down to being very specific to situations that you would run into on an EMS call or as an EMS practitioner. And those courses are all 2 days long. So that's the standard format for our course. And we also just are rolling out a core instructor course so that if you take the instructor course, you can take all of our courses and become an instructor in our courses. So.
Okay. And so both you and Jim are teaching this course, I presume?
Not yet, but okay. I hope to.
Okay.
I'm not on the committee that rolled it out. So we have Bruce Evans. I don't know if you know Bruce Evans.
I've heard that name.
He's the chair of the course. Okay. And Scott Maton from New Jersey, from Monarch in New Jersey. He's also been very involved with the course. So.
Okay. And Jim, you were going to say something?
Oh, you bet. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to be part of the instructional component of the course. You know, when you look at, you know, sometimes we have EMTs and they go right to paramedic school and, you know, they don't have a chance to develop the people skills oftentimes that are necessary to deal with patients and their families, let alone other medical personnel or coworkers. So I think this course is going to go a long way in helping them, you know, deal with those issues and be able to interact on a more professional level. And of course, the course topics include personnel and professional core values, ethics, decision making, duty to serve, and also a big one is conflict resolution, you know, how crews interact with each other. So I think this is a valuable program, and I certainly look forward to being part of the instructor team.
And tell us about sort of the way it's structured. Is it a mix of lecture, group work? Is there some a group work where there's sort of a discovery process where they go through cases? What's the sort of pedagogy behind it?
Yeah, I don't want you guys to – this is like free advertisement here right now. So here's a chance to really pump your course and stuff.
Yeah. Throughout the course presentation, they have different learning activities and they have group activities and there are video case studies and written case studies where the students will get to talk about exploring ethics and personal leadership and identify their leadership roles.
What was that like putting together the video cases? Was that a challenge finding people to do it and writing the scripts for it?
Because I wasn't personally involved with that, I would have to refer that to Bruce and Scott and
okay.
We also had Matt Zavadsky.
Yeah, but you've seen the videos.
Was involved with that. I've seen pieces of them. I have not seen the whole thing. No,
oh, okay.
Not yet. The first course is November 22nd in Fort Worth.
Oh, okay.
That's when they're rolling it out at the Texas EMS conference. So,
very good.
So it is just brand new.
And Jim, are you going to that?
No, I won't be able to attend that particular course, but I hope to certainly be at others. And, you know, one great thing is the course is accredited by the Continuing Education Coordinating Board by Emergency Medical Services. So individuals who take the training will be able to use this for their recertification hours. So we think that's a good deal as well. So we're anxious to hear how the course goes in November. And I wish I was able to go to Fort Worth to participate in the rollout, but I'll just have to wait and wait for something to come a little bit closer to Florida.
Right. Right. So the two of you mentioned social media, which we all know has been a hot topic. What would you say in your estimation? I'll start with Connie, is the second leading ethical sort of breach of ethics that happens in EMS?
Well, I think it's the justice and veracity parts of ethics. You know, you're treating your patients equally and being truthful and things like that in social media. I think that's a big issue because, you know, they're putting pictures on social media, they're talking about the size of their patients, they're just and they're not thinking before they do it.
Yeah.
So
or complaining about the drunks they've had to deal with.
Yes.
Tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we all did that at some point, but we didn't do it in a public forum.
No.
Like they're able to do now.
It was locker room talk. It was in the bay talk. Yeah.
Yes, and I think all of us that have been around for a while have seen those situations where people use bad judgment and talked about it out for breakfast after a shift, and you know this is the same kind of thing. Only in a restaurant, 20 people might hear the conversation. In social media, hundreds or thousands.
Right. And Jim, in your estimation, what would you say is another leading ethical issue in our industry that seems to be broached on a regular basis?
Well, you know, I think just going back to the entire ethics course that, you know, and again, going back to the code of ethics, that we have respect for human dignity unrestricted by consideration of nationality, race, creed, color, status, you know, so while we have the, you know, the Facebook and other social media issues, we also want to include in the training, you know, that we deal with a lot of people from a lot of different places in the world, you know, whose skin color may be different from their own. And that's wonderful. You know, I think that, you know, the diversity is what makes America wonderful, and that they should embrace that and not, you know, do something negative with that. And so many times we see that also becoming a problem.
And how big a
Wait, I'm going to jump in here and stuff.
Please.
So what do you – do you envision as much has happened with other NEMT-sponsored courses, PHDLS and certainly the pediatrics and advanced medical life support, do you see these being more integrated into the primary EMS training programs, whether it be EMR, EMT, and that the these principles go from this continuing education course to catch all the people that have been out in practice versus trying to establish things for those that are still to enter practice?
Well, what we're hoping is that those principles get incorporated into initial training as well. But right now, these courses are targeted towards the folks that are already out and practicing. Even my paramedic course used the PHTLS textbook as part of its course. So even though we didn't take PHTLS, we used PHTLS principles. So I think that this could be a good resource for initial education as well.
Which is a good sequela to my next question. Do you think there's a book on this topic that might be in the future?
I think we'll have a series of reference books, but I don't know if we have a textbook for this course. Jim, I don't think we've written a textbook, right?
Not yet, but I think it's an absolutely terrific idea. And, you know, what I would also bring up is that, you know, having been a director for some large EMS systems for the last 24 years, I would bring this course in-house. And not only would I send one shift, I'd bring them back over a period of months, and I would run every EMT and paramedic through this ethics course and make it something mandatory that they would have to attend. I just believe that strongly in it. You know, it depends on how much experience and so on that individuals have. But, you know, we send people to so many different courses on so many different things. I see this as our core values in emergency medical services. And as an EMS director, I would certainly bring this course in-house. You know, run one shift through the two-day program, bring them back in a month, run another shift through it, and a month later, you know, run everybody else through it. I just feel that strongly about the need for this type of course out in our emergency medical community.
Bill, would you echo that sentiment? Because I suspect, you know, one of the biggest issues for most EMS services is complaints from the public about attitude and about privacy and et cetera. Bill, would you agree that that's probably the type of course that most services would want to embrace for their staff?
Oh, I think I think taking the opportunity to refocus people on the principles of why we're here and just talking about ethics in general has great value. And I think that we want to have people that are ethically based and have that in their mind. And that helps guide their actions. And so that may be able to prevent some of those bad experiences that we historically have seen in the past. So, yeah, the answer is not only, you know, trying to get everyone through it. The challenge is, I can tell you, and Connie can appreciate this, a 16-hour program for an agency of our size would be challenging. So there would be what we would do is look for ways to chunk it or put this in throughout our entire continuing education curriculum. We may not certify our people, but certainly the principles and integrate it into everything that we do would be a great way to cover the program.
Excellent. When I was asking both of you earlier about what you thought was kind of a leading leading issues in ethics, I was a bit of a leading question because I was thinking of some of the fraudulent certifications that have been going on in both Canada, the U.S., and probably other parts of the world as well. CPR certifications, EMT recertifications, those kinds of things. Is that a big piece of this course, in your estimation?
I think that would fall under the personal and professional core values that the core teaches. Which is a whole section of the course.
Well, and I think that, you know, when you look at the ethics, you know, it's really the difference between right and wrong. And I think that the situation you bring up, I've got a very good friend up in the Massachusetts area, in the Boston area of Massachusetts, and you probably read about it. I mean, they had hundreds of individuals who falsified advanced cardiac life support certifications, basic life support investigations have taken place over the last year and a half in dealing with that. So, you know, again, what it all comes down to is right and wrong. And I think that, unfortunately, in this day and age, you know, we need to talk about right and wrong.
Can you think of I'll ask you first, Connie, and then Jim. Can you think of any examples of ethical dilemmas that would be in this course, cases that would be grayer areas where there's not necessarily a right or wrong, but there's a process of arriving at a decision?
I'm trying to think, something that comes to my mind is on calls, because primarily what I did for the last 25 years was patient care and dealing with end-of-life calls, end-of-life situations, and knowing what to do and what not to do, going to pick up to see patients who don't want to go to the hospital, but you know they need to. I think those situations EMTs and paramedics are faced with every day, and they need to talk them through beforehand.
Right.
Just to know that's going to be something that they face.
Yeah. Jim, are you still on the line?
Sure am. Yes,
oh,
I sure
okay,
am.
Okay, good. I think we got Bill back. Bill, are you back?
Yes, I'm back, but I'm dealing with some sounds in the background I'm trying to deal with.
All right. Okay. Jim, any thoughts from you on one of those gray ethical areas?
Well, I think Connie brought up a good point, and many times, you know, you'll have EMS crews on a scene, maybe from two different agencies that, you know, have a different idea on how to treat the patient. And, you know, dealing with that in a professional manner on a scene and, you know, how to contact the medical director, medical control to deal with that. And another big one that I've had to deal with too many times is you have a patient that needs to go to the hospital, and you have a crew that wants to talk the patient out of going, you know, and Of course, there, that's in the organizations that I've been with, you know, punishment's not the order of the day, but, you know, refusing to transport someone or talking someone out of going to the hospital, that's grounds for immediate dismissal. And I think that's a big one. I think that sometimes, you know, the folks get a little lazy out there and they'd rather talk somebody out of going than, you know, go through the drill of taking them to the hospital. And then I think then you oftentimes deal with, you know, the medical ethics about proper documentation, I think, is an issue. Making sure that, you know, everything that did happen is properly documented. You know, if there is a mistake made, to be big enough to admit what the mistake was, if it was a medication error, so that can be dealt with. And I think, you know, again, you know, just coming back to doing what's right, you know, and being honest about your care. And, you know, mistakes do happen. And, you know, in order to protect the patient, to make sure that those mistakes are brought out, you know, certainly in my career, if someone comes up and says, hey, I did this or that, you know, honesty goes a long way. We fix the problem and move on. And, you know, you hope that no harm comes from that. But when you find out that someone has falsified and lied about a situation and, you know, there was a compromise in patient care, you know, then obviously that's a very big issue.
That's interesting. I come from a Canadian perspective, and I've done a few ride-outs in the United States. And one of the things that really disturbed me, I guess, were calls where someone genuinely needed to go to the hospital and the paramedics wanted to take them to the hospital, but they refused based on cost, based on affordability, and coming from a universal healthcare system where that's not an issue, it really shocked me to see someone. One example was a guy who had chest pain. Now, it was difficult to say whether it was cardiac in origin or not. The 12-lead was normal, but it certainly, you know, had the signs and symptoms of cardiac ischemia, and he just adamantly refused to go to the hospital because he decided he could not afford to do so. And it was really painful to see the paramedics struggle to convince him to come unsuccessfully. Is that a challenge? I don't know if that's really an ethical issue because they're trying to do the right thing for the patient, but is that a subject that comes up in your discussions about ethics?
Well, it's certainly a situation that we deal with here in the United States. Obviously, we charge for services. We use the funding that we get from those charges to offset the cost of the service. Of course, with the economic downturn, we do work very hard to collect every dollar we can to bring back into the service. We've across the country have had layoffs and even medical procedures that were a little bit on the expensive side have had to be cut to be able to, meet the bottom line. But when we do have patients that, really meet the medical necessity criteria, we do everything we can do to assure them that if it's a Medicare patient or Medicaid or so on, that, we'll work with them, even if it means, putting somebody on $25 a month to pay the bill. We certainly want to transport them and do the right thing. But, you're right. There is the other side of that coin, which is the financial side of the coin. And we're under a lot of political pressure, whether you're in a private service, a governmental service, to be able to collect as much as you can to keep the taxes down. So it is quite a dilemma, and we do our best to balance both the patient care side of it as well as the economic side of it.
That just reminds me of your initial part of your career, Jim, working for a funeral service. Did anyone ever tease you back then about that being a conflict of interest?
Well, they still tease me about that. And, that's the reason that the funeral homes were basically forced out because of the conflict of interest. If you go back into the early funeral home days, they did not charge a penny to transport patients because if someone passed away and the funeral home got the call, well, then they were money ahead. And the ambulance service was also a very lucrative advertising for the funeral home. But, I still get kidded about that today, and especially when I go out and I go to an area where they're having old fire trucks and old ambulances, and you see the old Cadillacs, and I remember, the Miller Meteors and the Superior coaches and driving those vehicles brings back a lot of wonderful memories, but they were different times, I can tell you that, and CB radios for communication, we have certainly come an awful long way.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Bill was on Horse and Buggy. That's how old he is.
Yeah. Be careful there, Rob, or we'll throw other things out about Canadians. But, I think that a comment that was made earlier, there's no question that I know that our providers get to a call scene. And the real dilemma is not that they don't want to take someone to the hospital. They feel that this person needs care, but they don't need a hospital. And that's the dilemma that they're in.
Right.
And it's a shame that particularly here in the United States, our system is so designed that the only time an ambulance is reimbursed is if it takes a patient to a hospital. There is not an alternative for the way that emergency services can handle things here. And you don't have that ability to offer them an alternative. And I think that genuinely some of our people are trying to save someone the burden that would come, not only to the facility that they transport to. And it is a shame that a country that is of our size and our economic capabilities and with our brain power and everything, that there are people here that won't seek attention, any kind of healthcare, regardless of what it is, because of the issue of payment. And yet we continue, without getting into a political thing here, we continue to not come up with a solution that really seems to work. And I think that that's the shame of it, that I don't think anyone should go without the ability to be able to seek health care. But I don't always think health care means delivered by an emergency department.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I know there are some things in the works nationally to talk about that problem. But I think that is as much of an ethical dilemma for EMTs on calls in this country as not wanting to take the patients to a hospital. I think they want them to get care wherever that could be, whether it's a doctor's office or an urgent care clinic or an emergency room. But I think most people who get into EMS genuinely want those patients to get care. You have a few that are burned out and just get lazy that really try to talk people out of going to the hospital, but those are far between. They're few and far between, and I think they're more likely to be on the side of trying to talk someone into going to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. So aside from incorporating the people course into the curriculum, that specific course into the curriculum, what, Connie, what advice would you give educators about this subject? Is it your feeling that this subject is adequately covered? I'm presuming not. Inadequately covered at the EMT level, at the EMTA and EMTP levels? And what advice would you give to educators in lieu of the people course sort of moving forward?
I think to incorporate into their course those ethical components of the autonomy, the fidelity, justice, non-malfeasance, benefeasance, veracity, all those things, that they need to have a good understanding of that, even at the EMT level, that mm-hmm. they are going to come into play in their practice. And maybe just sit down and discuss that, you know, find some cases where those things happen at the EMT level, at the intermediate level, at the paramedic level, because they may change as you come along that scope of practice, as you will.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim, but I think it needs to be the foundation of being an EMT or being a paramedic.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. It really should be addressed at the entry level. Jim, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think Connie makes a good point. And my son is in paramedic school right now. And I would tell you
nice.
That, yeah, it's wonderful. You know, so yeah. I get to help him with his homework. And once in a while, you know, it's he's telling me about medications that I never heard of. So I need to kind of bone up a little bit with him. But, you know, right now, with so many changes in EMS and so much progress we've made with, you know, induced hypothermia, 12 lead EKGs, you know, we're doing so many wonderful things. And, you know, the time frame that our EMTs and paramedics are in school is so compressed. And, you know, they're trying to put so much into the course to keep it from going to a two-year program or even longer. So I think that while they're trying to, you know, get all these new procedures, the medications, the all the things that go into EMT and paramedic training, you know, what's going to kind of fall by the wayside. And I think that in the very beginning, you know, in any EMT or paramedic book, you know, this information is covered. And I think at the very end of the textbook, it's covered to some extent. But I just don't think that the EMT and paramedic courses have the opportunity or the ability at this point to really to go into any kind of depth. You know, and that's where it's wonderful when, you know, we can take these courses and that right to the EMT and paramedic training programs and provide, you know, if it's not a 16-hour course, to provide a condensed version of that and then encourage them to take the full two-day course when they have the opportunity to do so.
Right. And you were saying this is being rolled out to working paramedics, which, you know, is such, it's really good to have that experience on your belt before you because you've had some actual cases, so you bring a lot more to the table, and discussing it from a entry-level student compared to an experienced provider is a big difference, and so it makes so much sense at the working level. The trouble with textbooks too is you really don't get much out of reading the material. This is a subject more than many other subjects that you really have to have discussions about cases, and I think part of the learning process is just learning how other people think about cases, you know, because the perceptions sometimes surprise people that you know one person has a specific view and then someone else has a completely different view of things. I think that's I'm just rambling here, just shoot me. Now
Well, and that's one of the things about ethical discussions is that two people may have a completely different view and they may both be right.
Yeah.
So in every situation is different in that. So what's right for me to do today may be completely wrong for the next patient. So I think that the discussion that crews have with each other, that preceptors and mentors have with the people they're working with, those are so important to grow the future's EMTs and the future's paramedics.
Right. Yeah, it just adds so much more understanding to hear other perspectives on the same case. So that's great. So listen, we're approaching the end of our show, actually, and we've reached that point where we need to wrap up. This is another one of those great discussions. We could probably go on for another couple of hours. Jim, I'll go to you and ask you if you have any final thoughts on the subject that you want to add that I haven't asked you about, and then we'll ask Connie the same question.
Sounds great, Rob. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come on and talk about the changes that we have in the Code of Ethics and also the course that NAMT is rolling out. So, I think it's all about getting the word out. And as we go forward in emergency medical services, you know, we always want to look at what we're doing and find out what we can do better. And it's just like taking a look at the Code of Ethics that I think that Dr. Gillespie did a fantastic job in back in 1978. But, you know, we don't need to wait that long to go back and review this or any other item that we deal with on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And so, you know, I think it's behooving all of us to go back and look at our organizations, our associations, and go back and, dust everything off and take a look at it from time to time and not wait so long to make changes. Because I think that by making the changes that we've made and putting the word out there, you know, in the course that we're offering, you know, it's all about keeping people out of trouble. God knows the trouble I could have gone in, you know, back in early days of my youth had social media been out there. And I think of the mistakes that I could have made, and luckily I'm an old guy. But, you know, what we want to do is to take all this and help our EMTs and paramedics be successful and help them not make mistakes and just kind of guide them through it and be mentors. So, you know, to me, it's all about taking good people and making them better. And I think that the Code of Ethics, I think that the course we're rolling out does all of those things.
That's great. Well, thanks so much, Jim. That's a very good synopsis. Bill, do you have any last questions or comments?
No, I just want to thank you guys both for being here tonight and sharing this information. And I think this will be a great course to add to all the other courses that are available through NEMT. So it's quite wonderful. So thank you.
Yes, thanks. So I want to thank Connie and Jim for joining us tonight. And sadly, Greg wasn't able to join us. But Bill, I'm glad you were able to join us later on in the show. So to all our listeners, I hope you'll after you've had a chance to download this podcast and maybe have some discussion amongst your colleagues, I hope you'll join us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/EMSEducast and post your comments or questions that you have about ethics. I think this is a great topic we should be talking about on a regular basis. So on behalf of Bill and Greg, and thanks again to Connie and Jim, have a great night.